flew open cartoon shade style. This wasn't a dream. I'd accidentally had sex with my grumpy boss, infuriating neighbor, and flagrant backyard peer. I waited for the stampede of regrets to charge through my brain like bison on a dusty prairie, but it seemed my body was too sated to allow for that. Knox had banged my brain and body into submission. Carefully, so as not to disturb my snoring bed partner, I rolled to face him. He was naked, the sheet tangled up in his legs, leaving most of his spectacular body on display. This was the first time I'd had the opportunity to study him up close without him knowing. That thick, dark, dirty blonde hair was mussed from my hands. There was a small scar between his eyebrows and another one, longer, more jagged, near his hairline. His lashes were long enough to make me jealous. His lips, usually closed in that firm, disapproving line, were parted slightly. He slept on his back, one tattooed arm under his head, the other around me. I hadn't pegged him for a cuddler. No one in their right mind would. But the hold he had on me said differently. His chest rose and fell with deep, even breaths. I studied his stomach muscles with fascination. Mine were sore from the unexpected ab workout orgasms delivered. His looked like they could withstand anything, tapering down to a taut V that disappeared beneath the sheet. He looked so peaceful that even the perpetual line of annoyance between his eyebrows had smoothed. I couldn't believe Knox Morgan was naked in my bed. Oh, God. Knox Morgan was naked. In my bed. And the sneaky son of a bitch had given me two of the most intense orgasms known to humankind. How in the hell was I supposed to look him in the eye now and not send my vagina into involuntary spasms? Ah, there it was. My old friend, abject panic. What was I doing in bed with a man I knew better than to sleep with, mere weeks after running away from my own wedding? I needed to get out of this bed because if Knox woke up and gave me a sleepy-eyed stare, I'd throw caution to the wind and hop right back on that cock of his without another thought. It took a few tries, but I managed to extricate myself from his surprisingly snuggly grip. Not wanting to wake him by rummaging through drawers, I grabbed the nightgown I'd set out for tonight and wiggled into it before tiptoeing out of the room. One time thing, I chanted to myself as I made my way down the stairs. It happened. It was over. Time to move on. I tripped over a discarded boot on my way into the kitchen. Ow! Damn it! I hissed. Waylon lifted his head from the couch, let out a yawn, and stretched luxuriously. Hi, I said, feeling self-conscious that the dog might be judging me for sleeping with his human. But if the basset hound was feeling judgmental, it didn't last, because he rolled over and promptly went back to sleep. I moved Knox's boots away from the foot of the stairs. We'd left a trail of clothing on the first floor, something else I'd never done. I'd pick it all up and fold it just as soon as I had a hit of coffee. The late night, the worry over Nash and Waylay's first day, not to mention the mind-altering orgasms, had all rendered me nearly comatose. I quickly started a pot of coffee, then rested my forehead on the counter while I waited for it to brew. I thought about Waylay trudging onto the big yellow school bus in her purple dress and pink sneakers, her new backpack full of supplies and snacks. She hadn't been excited for her first day of sixth grade. I could only imagine how awful last year, her first in Knockemout, had been. Hopefully, between Nina, Chloe, and a new teacher, Waylay would get the second chance she so deserved. And if that didn't do the trick, I would find another solution. Waylay was a smart, funny, sweet kid, and I wouldn't let the world ignore that. The coffee maker beeped its siren song of a finished pot. My fingers had just closed around the handle of the coffee carafe when there was a peppy knock at the front door. Waylon's head popped back up from the couch. Hastily, I poured a mug and took a scalding swallow before throwing open the door. I choked on the mouthful of caffeine when I found my parents standing on the porch. There's our girl. My mother, looking tan and happy, opened her arms. At 61, Amanda Witt still dressed to accentuate the curves that had caught my father's eye in college. She took pride in coloring her hair the same auburn it had been on their wedding day, though now she wore it in a daring pixie cut. She golfed, worked part-time as a school counselor, and breathed life into every room she entered. Mom? I croaked, automatically leaning in for a hug. Lou, isn't this the cutest little cottage you've ever seen? She said. My father grunted. He had his hands stuffed into the pockets of his shorts and was nudging the porch railing with the toe of his sneakers.
Seems solid, he said.
Mom was impressed by pretty things. Dad preferred to appreciate sturdiness.
How you doing, kiddo? He asked.
I transferred my hug to him and laughed as my toes left the ground. While Mom was a few inches shorter than Tina and me, Dad was over 6 feet tall. A bear of a man who always made me feel like everything was going to be okay. What are you two doing here? I asked as he carefully put me down.
Sweetheart, you can't tell us we have a granddaughter and not expect us to drive straight here. Did we get you out of bed? That's a lovely nightgown, Mom noted.
Bed. Nightgown. Sex. Knox. Oh, God.
I told you we should have cut that cruise short, Lou, Mom said, slapping Dad on the shoulder. She's obviously depressed. She's still in her pajamas.
She's not depressed, Mandy,
Dad insisted, rapping his knuckles on the doorframe as he stepped inside.
What is this, oak?
I don't know, Dad. Mom, I'm not depressed, I said, trying to figure out a way to get them out of the house before my naked guests woke up. I just, worked late last night, and there was a family emergency. Mom gasped.
Is something wrong with Waylay?
No, Mom, sorry, not our family. The family who owns this place and the bar I work at.
I can't wait to see it. What's it called again? Hanky Pank?
Honky Tonk, I corrected her, spying my dress on the floor. Did you see the living room? It came out as an almost shout, and my parents exchanged a glance before pretending to be enthralled with the space I was waving at.
Just look at that fireplace, Lou.
Yes, look at the fireplace, I all but screeched.
Dad grunted. As my parents admired the fireplace, I hooked the dress with my toes and swept it under the kitchen table.
And you got a dog. My, you have been busy since the wedding.
Moylan lifted his head, a jowl still stuck to the pillow. His tail thumped on the cushion, and my mom dissolved into a puddle of affection.
Who's a handsome boy? You are, sir. Yes, you are.
See, Mandy, she's not depressed. She's just busy, Dad insisted.
Isn't the view of the woods great? I said, the words sounding strangled as I pointed frantically at the windows. When they turned to admire the woods through the glass, I grabbed Knox's jeans off the floor and threw them into the cabinet under the sink.
Beeper! Come meet your niece or nephew doggy!
My mother was using her straight-A report card on the refrigerator voice, which was definitely loud enough to wake the man upstairs in my bed.
You guys brought Beeper?
Beeper was my parents' latest rescue dog. She was a mix of breeds. I got them the DNA test for Christmas the previous year that had been scrambled together and came out looking like a large brown Brillo pad with feet. The Brillo pad appeared in the doorway and trotted inside. Waylon sat up and gave an appreciative woof.
This is Waylon. He's not mine. He belongs to my, neighbor? Hey, do you guys want to get out of here and go for breakfast or lunch or just leave for any reason at all?
Waylon hopped off the couch and booped noses with Beeper. Beeper let out a high-pitched yap, and the two of them began to zoom around the minuscule first floor.
Daisy, baby, what the fuck are you doing down there?
I watched in horror as bare feet attached to naked, muscular legs appeared on the stairs. Mom and I froze to the spot as boxer briefs, thank God for penis-covering miracles, came into view. Dad,
moving quickly for a big guy, put himself between us and the approaching boxer briefs.
"State your business," Dad shouted at Knox's bare torso.
"Wow, wow, wow," Mom whispered.
She wasn't wrong. The man was freaking spectacular. Waylon and Beeper chose that moment to take their zoomies up the stairs.
"Daze, you want to explain what's going on?"
Knox drawled as he sidestepped the canine catastrophe. I ducked under Dad's arm and moved to stand between my parents and my boss, neighbor, one-time sex partner. Okay, so I really wish I would have had more coffee.
"Are those tattoos real? How many times a week do you go to the gym?"
Mom asked, peering under Dad's armpit.
"What the hell is going on?" Dad rumbled.
"Oh, Lou, so old-fashioned," Mom said, giving him an affectionate pat on the backside before walking up to Knox and hugging him.
"Mom!" Knox stood there woodenly, clearly in shock.
"Welcome to the family," she said, pressing a kiss to his cheek. "Oh my God, I'm going to die of embarrassment," I decided.
Knox patted my mother awkwardly on the back.
Thanks.
She released him and then grabbed me by the shoulders.
"We were so worried about you, sweetheart. It wasn't like you to just up and leave your own wedding like that. Not that we ever liked Warner that much anyway."
"Always thought he was a pretentious ass,"
Dad cut in.
"I thought maybe you were depressed," Mom continued. "But now it all makes sense. You fell in love with someone else and couldn't go through with a sham of a marriage. Isn't that wonderful, Lou?"
"I need coffee," Knox muttered and headed for the kitchen.
"Aren't you going to introduce us?"
Dad demanded, still not looking very pleased.
"Naomi,"
Knox called from the coffee pot.
"Pants?"
I winced. "Under the sink." He gave me a long, unreadable look before bending to retrieve his jeans. My mother gave me an incredibly inappropriate double thumbs up as Knox turned his back on us and zipped the fly of his jeans.
"Mom," I mouthed.
But she just continued flashing me the thumbs and a creepy smile of approval. It reminded me of the time I'd taken her to see the Andersontown Community Theater's production of The Full Monty. My mom had an appreciation for the male form.
"Okay, I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. Mom, Dad, this is Knox. He's my neighbor and boss. We're not in love."
My mother's face fell, and Dad looked at the floor, hands on hips, his shoulders hunched. I'd seen that reaction before. Concern, disappointment, worry, but never for anything I'd done. It was always Tina bringing them trouble. I hated that this time it was me.
"Is this some one-night stand? Are you having some kind of midlife crisis, and this guy took advantage of you?"
My father, who had won Best Hugger 3 years running at the Witt family reunion, looked as if he was about ready to start throwing punches.
"Dad, no one took advantage of anyone."
I shut up as Knox appeared at my side and handed me a fresh cup of coffee.
"How long are you two in town?"
Knox asked my parents. Dad glared at him.
"We haven't decided," Mom said to his tattoos. "We're very excited to meet our granddaughter, and we're a little concerned about you know who."
She pointed at me as if I hadn't heard her stage whisper. Knox looked at me and sighed. He put his free hand on the back of my neck and pulled me into his side.
"Here's the situation. Your daughter blew into town trying to help her no-good sister, no offense."
"None taken," Mom assured him.
"I took one look at Naomi and fell hard and fast."
"Knox," I hissed.
But he squeezed the back of my neck and continued.
"We're just seeing where this thing goes. Could be nothing, but we're enjoying it. You raised a smart, beautiful, stubborn woman."
Mom fluffed her hair. "She gets that from me."
"What is it you do for a living, Knox?"
Dad demanded. Knox, I corrected. He owns businesses and some property, Dad. My father harrumphed.
Self-made man? Guess it's better than Mr. Nepotism.
I assumed he was speaking of Warner, who got a job at the family company after college graduation.
Got lucky a few years back and won the lottery. Invested most of it here in my hometown,
Knox explained.
Thought I'd used up all my luck till Naomi here showed up.
Fake romantic Knox was going to ruin all real romance for me if I wasn't careful.
His name's on the police station, I said with forced brightness.
His grip on my neck tightened again. I reached behind him and pinched the skin just above the waistband of his jeans. He squeezed harder. I pinched harder.
I need some Advil or something, Dad muttered, rubbing his forehead.
You shouldn't have a headache, Lou. Our daughter is fine. I was the one who was worried on the way down here, remember?
Mom said, as if Knox and I weren't even in the room.
Yeah, well, now I'm the one who thinks there's something wrong with her.
Let me get you something for your head, I offered, trying to extricate myself from Knox's grip. But he merely squeezed tighter and took a sip of his coffee.
Don't be silly. I have all of your father's favorite anti-inflammatories in my purse, Mom announced.
She bustled over to where she'd planted her purse next to the front door. Dan shoved his hands in his pockets and wandered into the kitchen. I saw him frown at Knox's t-shirt where it lay crumpled on the stovetop.
Waylay is going to be so excited to meet you. Where are you two staying while you're here? I asked, desperate to make small talk.
There's a motel in town. We'll see if they have any rooms available, Dad said, opening cupboard doors and tapping the shelves.
After a 3-week luxury Mediterranean cruise, I didn't think my parents would enjoy the moldy, dilapidated motel. I was already shaking my head when Knox spoke up.
I think we can do better than that. We'll find room for you at Liza J's.
Knox, I hissed. How was I going to pretend to be in a relationship with Knox with my parents staying practically next door? He leaned in like he was going to nuzzle the side of my face and whispered,
Shut up.
Then he brushed his lips over my temple, and my nipples went hard. Mom waltzed by with a bottle of pills, beaming at me. I crossed my arms over my chest.
I'm sure you'd want to stay as close to your daughter and granddaughter as possible, Knox said.
Knox, can I see you outside? I asked through clenched teeth.
Do you see how they can't keep their hands off each other? Mom trilled behind us.
Yeah. You got any antacids in there? Dad asked, looking ill.
I closed the door and dragged Knox onto the porch.
So what are we supposed to do? Pretend to be in a relationship until my parents leave?
You're welcome. You fucking owe me, Daze. Do you have any idea what this is going to do to my bachelor reputation?
I don't care about your reputation. I'm the one who has to pass a home study. Besides, I'm tired of owing you. Why do you keep riding to my rescue?
He tucked a strand of hair behind my ear.
Maybe I like being the hero for once.
My knees threatened to buckle as the knee-jerk desire to swoon swept over me. His grin was downright sinful when he pulled me into him. The contact with his body so soon after the best sex ever was frying my circuits. I didn't want to yell at him anymore. I wanted to kiss him.
Or maybe, he whispered against my lips. I just want to know what it feels like to have your smart mouth wrapped around my cock.
That was at least honest and dirty, and I liked it. He had one hand boldly cupping my rear end. The other held my hair at the base of my neck.
Pardon the interruption.
Instinctively, I jumped back from Knox. Well, I tried to. He still had a pretty good grip on me, which turned out to be a good thing since I probably would have fallen right over the railing when I spotted caseworker Yolanda Suarez eyeing us from the foot of the steps.
Mrs. Suarez, how lovely to see you again.
I choked the words out.
25. Family fuss. Knox. Even with the unwelcome intrusions of Naomi's parents, followed by the disapproving caseworker who'd been missing a signature on a page, I was in a great fucking mood when I returned to the hospital. Sure, the whole pretending to be in a relationship thing was probably, definitely going to be a pain in the ass, but it would get Naomi out of a jam and piss my brother off. I'd woke up that morning knowing that once wasn't going to be enough when it came to her. Now we could fool around for a few weeks, get each other out of our systems, and once her parents headed home, go back to our regular lives with itches scratched. All in all, it wasn't a bad gig. I stepped into Nash's room and found most of the knock-em-out PD crowded inside.
"Let me know what you find from the office and the storage unit," Nash said from the bed. His color was a bit better. "Sure glad you didn't kick the bucket, son," Graves said. The rest of them nodded their agreement. "Yeah, yeah, now get the hell out of here and try to keep knock-em-out from unraveling."
I nodded to each cop as they left, thinking about what Naomi had said about Nash cleaning up the department to better serve the town. She was right. I guess we both wanted to do right by the town that had given us a place to call home.
"So, how's Naomi?"
Nash asked, sounding only a little irritated after the last officer walked out the door. "Good," I said. Morgan men didn't kiss and tell or fuck and tell, but I did allow the smallest of smirks.
"You fuck it up yet?"
"You're hilarious when you're pumped full of lead and drugs." He sighed, and I could tell he was already sick of being cooped up in the hospital. "What's with the staff meeting?" I asked.
"Couple of break-ins last night, an office and storage unit, both owned by Rodney Gibbons. Office wasn't bad. Someone got the petty cash and riffled through the safe. Combination was on a sticky note next to the computer. Storage unit was trashed. No one saw anything at either place," he explained.
"How long they keeping you?" I asked. Nash used his thumb to scratch between his eyebrows, a tell of frustration.
"Too fucking long. Said the soonest I can get out is a couple of days. Then it's PT to see how much mobility I can get back."
If Nash didn't get back to 100%, he'd be handcuffed to a desk for the rest of his career. Something even I knew he'd hate.
"Then don't fuck around," I advised. "Do what the docs say, do your PT and get your shit together. No one wants you riding a desk." "Yeah, Luce is digging into it," he said, changing the subject. He didn't sound happy about it.
"Is he?" I hedged.
"You damn well know he is. It's police business. I don't need either of you amateurs out on the streets stirring shit up."
I was offended by the amateur remark. We'd been professional hellraisers in our day. And though I might be a little rusty, I had a feeling our friend was even more dangerous now than he'd been at 17.
"Your boys get anything on the guy?" I asked.
Nash shook his head.
"Stolen car, wiped clean on the outskirts of Lawlerville. Locals found it about an hour ago."
"How clean?" He shrugged, then winced.
"Dunno yet. No prints on the wheel or door handles."
"Asshole's dumb enough to shoot a cop. He's dumb enough to leave prints somewhere," I predicted.
"Yeah," he agreed.
He was moving his legs restlessly under the thin white blanket.
"Heard Liza has a few new guests."
I nodded. "Naomi's parents showed up this morning. Guess they're anxious to meet their granddaughter."
"Heard that too. Also heard that you made quite the impression coming downstairs in your birthday suit."
"Your grapevine needs some pruning. I was wearing underwear."
"Better dad loved that.
He handled it."
"Wonder how you stack up against the ex-fiancée," he mused.
"Her parents weren't fans of the ex," I said, though I wasn't sure how I compared in Naomi's eyes. I peered down at Nash's untouched lunch tray, broth and ginger ale.
How the hell are you supposed to survive on clear liquids? My brother made a face. Something about not taxing the system. I'd kill for a burger and fries. The boys are too scared of the nurses to sneak in any contraband. I'll see what I can do, I promised. Gotta head out. Some shit to take care of before the big family dinner tonight, celebrating Wei's first day and Naomi's parents coming to town. I hate you, Nash said, but there was no real heat to his words. Let this be a lesson to you, little brother. You gotta make your moves faster, or else someone else will make them for you. I started for the door. Tell Wei to let me know if anyone at school messes with her, Nash called. Will do. Tell Naomi she's welcome to swing by any time. Not happening. Liza J's house no longer smelled like a mothball museum. It might have had something to do with someone opening the door to let four dogs in or out every 5 minutes. Then again, it probably had more to do with the fact that rooms that hadn't been touched in 15 years were getting Naomi's floor-to-ceiling treatment. Dusty drapes and the windows behind them opened wide. The lights were on in the den, a room that hadn't been used since the house had welcomed paying guests. I spied Steph behind the desk on the phone, staring at the laptop in front of him. There was music coming from the kitchen, and I could hear the sounds of people socializing in the backyard. Maybe not all change was bad. I knelt to give the pack of dogs their rubs. Naomi's parents' dog, Beeper, was standing on one of Waylon's ears. Fuck yeah! The exclamation came from the den. Steph closed his laptop triumphantly and stood behind the desk, arms overhead in a V. The dogs, excited by his excitement, charged the doors and barreled into the room. Okay, no, everyone out, Steph said. These are very expensive Gucci loafers you're destroying with your doggy toenails. Good news? I asked as he exited the den. The dogs took off toward the kitchen, moving as one clumsy organism of slobber and barks. Don't buddy up to me. I'm still mad at you, he said. When Naomi and I brought her parents over to meet my grandmother, Steph had tried to cover the fact that he'd been in town for days. No one would have bought his, "What a coincidence, I just got here this morning," bullshit for long. I just helped them get here by telling Mandy and Lou what a relief it was to have Steph under Liza's roof for such a long visit. You'll get over it, I predicted. Just wait until you disappoint Mandy, he said. It feels like kicking a litter of kittens. I didn't really have anyone in my life to disappoint. I followed him into the dining room, where my grandmother's buffet had been transformed into a high-end bar, complete with cut lemons and limes, an ice bucket, and several bottles of decent liquor. What are you drinking? He asked me. Bourbon or beer? It's too hot for straight room-temperature liquor, and beer isn't celebratory enough. We're having G&Ts. I could roll with that. What are we celebrating? Naomi's house, he said. It went on the market 2 days ago, and she has three offers. Let's hope she thinks it's good news. Why the hell wouldn't she? Steph shot me a bland look, then started scooping ice into two highball glasses. You know how some people have dream houses? Well, Naomi had the Next Step house. She loved it. It was the perfect place to start a family. The right neighborhood, the right size, the right number of bathrooms. Giving up that house is like giving up on all her dreams. Plans change, I said, as he cracked open a bottle of tonic water. I'll say, since she had no intention of getting in bed with you. Here we go, I muttered. This is the part where you tell me I'm not good enough for her, and I tell you to fuck off. He poured a healthy slug of gin into each glass. Let's skip to the bottom line. She's giving up everything to clean up Tina's mess. Again. As long as you're a pleasant distraction and not another mess to fix, I won't destroy your life. Gee, thanks. By the way, Same goes if you hook up with Jer. To Steph's credit, he didn't fumble the lime slices or sprigs of rosemary he was adding to each glass when I mentioned my best friend. So that's what it feels like to have an obnoxious meddler sticking his nose where it doesn't belong, he said evenly. Yeah, not great, is it? Message received. Maybe a short-term palate cleanser is exactly what she needs to get Warner Fuckface III out of her head and start planning a life for herself and Way. I'll drink to that, I said, ignoring the way palate cleanser rubbed me the wrong way. Cheers. Let's go tell our girl that in 15 days her money troubles are officially over if she's willing to kiss her dreams goodbye. We headed into the sunroom and out onto the deck. The humidity had broken just enough that it was almost comfortable outside. Oldies music poured from a speaker on the table. Lou was manning the grill. The sizzle and scent of red meat made my mouth water. Amanda and my grandmother were sitting in Adirondack chairs, shading their eyes from the lowering sun. The dogs, wet now, shook and sunned themselves in the grass. But what caught and held my attention was Naomi. She was knee-deep in the creek, sunglasses on, that short, dark swing of hair pulled back in a clip. She was wearing a coral bikini that showed off every curve I'd enjoyed that morning. Waylay, in a pink polka-dotted bathing suit, doubled over and scooped two hands of cold creek water at her aunt. Naomi's shriek and ensuing laughter as she attempted to exact revenge on the kid hit me someplace besides my cock. I felt a warmth in my chest that had nothing to do with the damn good gin and tonic in my hand. Amanda adjusted her straw hat and sighed. This is heaven, she said to my grandmother. You must have had a different Bible than the one I grew up on, Liza quipped. I always dreamed of having a big family and a big house. All these generations and dogs all tangled up in each other's lives. I guess sometimes we're just not meant for certain things. She said it wistfully. Steph cleared his throat. Ladies, can I freshen up those Long Island iced teas? Liza held up her empty glass. I could do another round. I'm still working on mine, sweetie, Amanda told him. Have you decided to forgive me? Steph asked. Well, you did sneak down here without a word, she said, lowering her sunglasses to give him what I identified as a mom look. But you were just looking out for my girl. Anyone who does that is always all right in my book. Steph dropped a kiss on top of her head. Thanks, Mandy. Naomi and Waylay were now in a full-fledged splash battle. Arcs of water rose high, catching glints of the late afternoon sun. How much time left on those burgers, Lou? Liza called. 5 minutes, he said. Knox, Amanda said, drawing my attention. Yes, ma'am. Take a walk with me, she said. Uh-oh. Steph flashed a smug look at me and disappeared inside with Liza's glass. I followed Amanda to the end of the deck and down the stairs into the yard. It felt like only yesterday that it was Nash and me in the creek fooling around, scaring the fish. Pop, manning the grill. She slid her arm through mine as we walked. You've only known Naomi for a short time, she began. I already didn't like where this was going. Sometimes you don't need a history to see the future, I said, sounding like a damn fortune cookie. She squeezed my arm. I meant, in her entire life, my daughter has never jumped into anything, especially bed with someone. I didn't know what to say to that, so I kept my mouth shut. She's a born caretaker, always fussing over everyone else in the room. It's no surprise to me that she'd step up to keep Waylay even when the rest of her life is spiraling out of control. She gives until she's got nothing left. This wasn't news to me. If Naomi wasn't slinging drinks to customers, she was doing everyone else's side work in the kitchen or cleaning out Liza's mausoleum of a house. You brought her a cup of coffee doctored up just the way she likes it, she continued. She also told me that you got her this place to stay and gave her a job. You drive her home? Steph mentioned you got her a cell phone when she didn't have one. I was getting antsy. I wasn't known for my patience with conversations when I didn't know where they were going. She's a worrier, but doesn't want anyone worrying about her, Amanda continued. I get that. You worrying about her, you taking care of her when you only just met, says a lot about your character. So does the fact Naomi let you into her bed without the usual 99-point inspection. I was equal parts uncomfortable and oddly pleased. All due respect, Amanda, I don't like talking about your daughter's sex life with you. That's because you're a man, sweetie, she said, patting my arm. I just want you to know that I see how you're taking care of my girl. In all their time together, I never once saw Warner bring her a cup of coffee. Never once saw him do anything that benefited her unless it benefited him, too. So, thank you for that. Thank you for seeing my girl and wanting to be there for her. You're welcome. It seemed like the appropriate response. Out of curiosity, why do you call her Daisy? She asked. She had flowers in her hair when I met her. Amanda's smile broadened. She left Warner and drove straight to you without even knowing it. Isn't that something? I didn't know if it was something or nothing. Yeah, something. Well, I like you, Knox. Lou will come around, eventually. But I like you already. Dinner's ready, Liza J bellowed from the deck. Get your behinds around the table. I'm starving, Amanda announced. Why don't you get our girls out of the creek? Sure. I stood there as Naomi's mother made a beeline for the house steps. Naomi's laugh and another splash caught my attention. I walked over to the edge of the creek and whistled. Waylay and Naomi paused their water fight, both laughing and dripping. Dinner's ready. Get your asses out of the water, I said.
He's so bossy,
Naomi said in a stage whisper. Waylay let out a girlish giggle. I tossed a starfish towel over Waylay's wet head. How was your first day, kid?
Fine, she said, peering quizzically out from under the towel.
The kid was a fucking rock. Abandoned by a no-good mother, taken in by an aunt she didn't know, then meeting her grandparents for the first time on the first day of school. And it was fine. She turned and ran for the stairs and the promise of food.
Go wash your hands, Way, Naomi called after her.
Why? I just got out of the water,
Waylay yelled back.
Then at least don't pet the dogs until after you eat.
Fine. That's all she'd tell me, too, Naomi said as I helped her up onto the bank. You worried? I asked, unable to tear my gaze off her breasts.
Of course I am. How am I going to fix any problems if I don't know they exist?
So talk to the teacher, I said, watching the outline of her nipples get more pronounced under the two triangles of fabric that stood between me and what I wanted.
I think I will, she said. How's Nash doing?
Instead of answering, I clamped a hand over her wrist and hauled her over to the shady patio under the deck. Her skin was cold from the creek. Seeing her curves all wet like that was messing with my head. I picked up the fluffy beach towel next to her neatly folded clothing on one of the lounge chairs that hadn't seen the light of day in years and handed it to her.
Thanks,
she said, bending over in front of me to run the towel through her hair. A man only had so much self-control, and I'd just reached my limit. I pulled the towel out of her hands and walked her backwards until her back met the support column.
Knox,
I pressed a finger to her mouth, then pointed above us. Who wants medium rare? Lou asked.
Steph, this drink ain't gonna refill itself, Liza J said.
What are you doing?
Naomi whispered. Pinning her in place with my hips, she got the message pretty damn quick.
When her mouth opened in an O, I yanked the triangles of her top apart. Full, luscious, wet. My mouth watered, and it had nothing to do with the food being passed above us. Jesus, Days. I see you like this, and I can't wait to get back in your bed. I dipped my head and closed my mouth over one chilled peak. Her sexy little gasp, the way her hands clamped on my shoulders, the way she leaned into my mouth like she wanted it as bad as I did. It all went straight to my dick. I'd fuck you right here if I thought for a second I could get away with it. She took one hand off my shoulder and shoved it between our bodies, cupping my erection through my jeans. I covered her hand with mine and squeezed, hard. I thrust against our hands, greedy for the friction. "Kids, dinner," Amanda called from above us.
"Aunt Naomi, how many green beans do I have to eat?"
The glassiness in Naomi's eyes cleared.
"Oh, my God,"
she mouthed at me. I gave both nipples a not-so-gentle tweak before readjusting her top. I wanted to fuck her in that bikini, to untie one or two of those strings and guarantee all the right access. Then I wanted to take her every way possible until neither one of us could walk. Instead, I was going to have dinner with a hard-on and an audience. Sometimes life just wasn't fucking fair. She slugged me in the shoulder.
"What is wrong with you?"
she hissed.
"Our families are right up there."
"A whole lot of things," I said with a grin.
"You're the worst."
"We're coming," she yelled.
"We will be later," I promised under my breath.
26. PMS and the Bully. Naomi. I arrived at Honky Tonk early for my shift in my dad's pristine Ford Explorer. A bonus to having my parents in town. Another bonus was the fact that they were having a movie night sleepover with Waylay at Liza's. I was under orders to buy a car ASAP. Between my poker winnings and the proceeds from the sale of my house, I found myself in a pretty solid financial position, even with the impending purchase of a decent car. Then there was the quickie Knox had coaxed me into that afternoon when he came over to help me put together Waylay's new desk. I was feeling pretty damn good about life when I strolled into Honky Tonk. "Hello, ladies," I said to Fee and Silver. "You're looking gorgeous today." "You're early and in a good mood," Fee noted, sliding the cash drawer into the register. "I hate that about you." Silver glanced my way as she flipped the stools off the bar. She paused.
"She's got orgasm face. She's not one of us."
Crap. The last thing Knox or I needed was our co-workers gossiping about our incredibly satisfying sex life. "Oh, come on," I scoffed, hiding my face behind a curtain of hair as I tied my apron. "A girl can be in a good mood without having orgasms. What's with the chocolate and heating pads?" Next to the register was a plate of brownies wrapped with pink cellophane, a box of stick-on heating pads, and a bottle of Midol.
"Knox's monthly care package," Silver said. "Who gave you the O-face?"
"Care package for what?" I asked, ignoring the question.
"All our cycles synced up. Stasia's too," Fee explained. "Every month, the boss puts together a period survival kit and is nice to us for a day or two."
"That's really nice of him," I said.
Fee slapped the bar. "Oh my God, you had sex with Knox."
"What? Me? Knox?"
I felt my face getting hot.
"Why would you think that? Can I have a brownie?"
"She's definitely deflecting," Silver decided. "Yeah, Nomi, your poker face needs some serious work. This is so fucking exciting. You know, he's never shagged an employee before. Man,
I knew there were sparks. Didn't I tell you there were sparks?"
Fee slapped Silver in the shoulder. "Yeah, sparks," Silver agreed. "So are you guys a thing? Or was it a heat of the moment, my brother's just been shot kind of thing?"
"On a scale of meh to my vagina is forever ruined, how good was he?"
Fee asked.
This was not going the way I'd planned. My gaze slid to the kitchen doors and back to the expectant faces before me. News traveled fast in this town, and I did not want to feed the gossip. You guys, I really don't want to talk about this. They stood there staring at me. Then they looked at each other and nodded.
Okay, here's how it's gonna go, Fee said. You're going to tell us everything, and in exchange, we won't tell anyone anything.
Or else what? I hedged. Silver's smile was wicked.
Or else we spend the whole shift wondering out loud who put that smile on your face in front of all the customers.
You're evil.
We're evil.
But we can be bought, Fee reminded me.
Your parents walked in on your one-night stand. Classic, Silver said 10 minutes later when I'd finished verbally vomiting all over them.
And your vagina is officially ruined, Fee added. And we aren't in a relationship, unless you're my parents or a caseworker weighing my stability as a guardian, in which case we've been swept away by an unexpected romance.
But you are having sex, Silver confirmed.
Temporarily, I said with emphasis.
Silver raised a pierced eyebrow. Fee stopped gobbling down her brownie.
Saying it out loud makes it sound stupid. Maybe we should finish getting ready to open?
I'm PMSing. I'd rather eat another brownie and talk about penis length and orgasm intensity, Fee said.
I was saved from responding by my phone signaling a text. Sloan. My blabbermouth niece told me something I think you should know.
Me.
What? Is my side part out of style?
Sloan.
Yes. Also, she said the teacher's been pretty rough on Wei the last 2 days.
Me.
What do you mean?
Sloan.
Chloe said Mrs. Felch is being mean to Weili, yelling at her in front of the rest of the class, making weird comments about her mom. Chloe and Nina got in trouble for defending her.
Me. Thanks for letting me know.
Sloan. You're going to go mom a lion on an elementary school teacher, aren't you? I pocketed my phone. I hate to do this to you guys, but I need to go to Weili's school.
Is Wei in trouble? Fee asked.
No, but Mrs. Felch is about to be. Mind covering for me until I get back?
Silver looked up from the heating pad she was taping to her stomach. I'll cover for you if you bring me back one of those pretzels with caramel dip from the place next to the school.
Fee's eyes lit up. Ooh, bring two.
Better make it three, Silver amended. Max is coming in at 4:30 and she's on day two of the red tide.
Three pretzels with caramel dip. Got it, I said, untying my apron and grabbing my purse. You sure you don't mind covering for me?
Fee waved away my concern. It's always slow the first hour or two after opening, and Knox won't be here with all us gals in the middle of Shark Week.
Shark Week?
She pointed at the My Doll and brownies.
Oh, right, that's Shark Week. Thank you for covering.
I blew them kisses and headed for the door. The school was less than 2 blocks away, so I hoofed it. It gave me the time to work up a good head of steam. I was sick and tired of people thinking they could judge someone by their family's behavior. I'd lived in the shadow of Tina's misdeeds my entire life, and I hated that Weili was facing the same kind of problem. She was just a kid. She should be having sleepovers, playing games, sneaking junk food, not dealing with the fallout of her mother's reputation. Worse yet, she hadn't trusted me enough to tell me she was having problems with her teacher. How could I fix a problem if I didn't know it existed? Knockemount Elementary School was a squat brick building in the middle of town. There was the standard wood-chipped playground to the right and the long drive out front where buses loaded and unloaded every day. The school day had already wrapped up, but I hoped I could catch Mrs. Felch in the building. The front doors were all still propped open from the mass exodus of students, so I headed inside. It smelled like floor polish and disinfectant. It was only the first week of school, but the bulletin boards outside the sixth grade classrooms were already full of artwork, except for room 303. The board was empty, except for a calendar with a countdown on it,
and a piece of paper with the name Mrs. Felch. I hadn't met her at back-to-school night. She'd been out sick, and I'd spent most of the hour gently reminding parents and school staff that I wasn't my sister. I kicked myself for not making more of an effort to meet her before leaving her in charge of my niece. I spied a woman sitting behind the desk at the front of the classroom. Best guess put her in her early 50s. Her silver-streaked hair was pulled back in a bun so tight I bet she got headaches from it. She was dressed in head-to-toe shades of beige, and her lips were pursed in a thin line as she scrolled through something on her phone. She gave off the air of someone who was disappointed in just about everything life had to offer. I gave a cursory knock and walked into the room. "Mrs. Felch, you don't know me, but..." The woman looked up and bobbled her phone, eyes narrowing behind her glasses. "Don't play games with me. I know who you are." Good Lord, hadn't the dang grapevine caught up to the teaching staff yet? "I'm not Tina. I'm Naomi Witt. My niece, Waylay, is in your class, and I'd like to talk to you about how you've been treating her." I'd never been good at confrontations. Hell, I'd squeezed my ass out of a church basement window to run away from a wedding rather than tell the groom I wasn't going to marry him. But in that moment, I felt a fire burning in my belly. Backing down wasn't an option. Neither was retreat. "How I've been treating her? I've been treating her the way she deserves to be treated," Mrs. Felch snarled. The lines on her face carved deeper. "I treat her the way the daughter of a whore deserves to be treated." "Excuse me? You heard me." A movement out of the corner of my eye caught my attention, and I realized that I had a much bigger problem than a horrible sixth-grade teacher.
27. Field Mice Revenge. Knox. I walked into Honky Tonk through the kitchen, twirling my keys around my finger and whistling. "Someone's in a good mood," Milford, the line cook, observed. I wondered exactly how big of a dick I usually was that made my good mood breaking news, then decided I didn't really give a shit. Making sure to school my expression into my normal scowl, I headed into the bar. There were about a half dozen early birds scattered around the place. Max and Silver were eating brownies behind the bar and clutching their midsections. Fee came out of the bathroom with her hands on her low back. "God, why do I have to pee 147 times a day when I'm riding the cotton pony?" She groaned when she spotted me. "Oh, what the hell are you doing here? It's period night." "I own the place," I reminded her, scanning the bar.
Yeah,
and you're also smart enough not to show up when you have three menstruating women on shift." "Where's Naomi?" I asked.
"Don't you take that tone with me today, Noxie. I will break your face."
I had taken no tone with her, but I knew better than to point that out. "I brought you brownies."
"You brought us brownies so we don't cry in the kitchen."
She had a point. Fee knew my secret. Tears were my kryptonite. I couldn't handle a woman crying. It made me feel desperate and helpless and pissed off. "Where's Naomi?" I asked again, trying to modulate my tone.
"I'm fine, Knox. Thanks for asking. Even though I feel like my uterus is being crumpled up inside my body so it can be expelled through my lady canal, I'm thrilled to be working tonight."
I opened my mouth to retort, but she held up a finger.
"Uh-uh. I wouldn't do that," she advised.
I shut my mouth and tagged Silver at the bar. "Where's Naomi?" Her expression stayed carefully blank, but her eyes skated to Fee, who was making an exaggerated slashing motion across her throat. "Seriously?" I asked. My business manager rolled her eyes.
"Fine.
Naomi was here, but there was some trouble with Waylay's teacher. She went to take care of it and asked us to cover for her."
"She's bringing us pretzels afterward,"
Max said around the brownie she held between her teeth as she shuffled by with two fresh beers. I was pretty sure that was a health violation, but was smart enough not to mention it. I eyed the women before me. You thought I'd be pissed that she went to take care of something at the school? Fee smirked. No, but it's a slow day. Thought it would be more fun this way. I closed my eyes and started to count to 10. Why haven't I fired you yet? Because I'm amazing, she sang, spreading her arms wide. She flinched and clutched her stomach. Fucking periods. Amen, Silver agreed. Strap on one of those damn heat pad things and take turns getting off your feet, I advised. Look who's Mr. Menstruation, Fee said. Working with the Synced Sisters has educated me in ways I never wanted to be. Who's the teacher?
What teacher?
Max asked as she blew past us again with a couple of empties. The brownie was now gone. I hoped it hadn't fallen into one of the beers. Waylay's teacher, I said in exasperation. Did she say what the problem was?
Is there a reason you're so interested?
Fee asked, looking too damn smug for my liking. Yeah, I'm paying her to be here, and she's not here.
Your tone is aggressive, and I don't react well to aggressive during my lady business,
Silver warned. This was why I didn't come near Honky Tonk during Code Red, which is how I labeled it in my calendar.
Mrs. Felch,
Max called from the corner two-top she'd commandeered. She was sitting on one chair with her feet propped on the second and a damp bar towel draped over her forehead and eyes.
I'm personally not a fan of Mrs. Felch. One of my kids had her. She gave homework over Christmas,
Fee recalled. Fuck. Fee and Silver turned to look at me. Max peeked out from under her cold compress. Mrs. Felch is married, I said.
That is usually what Mrs. means,
Silver said, patronizing me. Mrs. Felch is married to Mr. Felch, Nolan Felch. Fee got it first.
Oh, shit. That's not good.
Wait, didn't Tina...
Yeah, she did. I gotta go. Try not to scare off all the patrons. Fee scoffed.
They're here for the free Bloody Mary shots we give out during crappy hour.
Whatever. Later. Heading for the parking lot, I vowed never to come back to Honky Tonk during a Code Red. I made it almost to my truck when Liza's Buick rolled up. But it was Naomi's dad, worry lines carved into his forehead, behind the wheel instead of my grandmother. Amanda was in the passenger seat, looking agitated. Everything all right? I asked, reading the mood.
Waylay is missing,
Amanda announced, a hand clutched to her heart. She walked to the cottage to get her schoolwork together and was supposed to come straight back to Liza's. We were going to have dinner and a movie night.
She didn't come back and her bike's gone, Lou said gruffly. We're hoping Naomi had seen her.
I swore under my breath. Naomi's not here. There was some trouble at the school with Way's teacher, and she went to handle it.
Maybe that's where Waylay went, Amanda said, clutching her husband's arm.
That's where I'm headed now, I said grimly. You're part of a parent-teacher conference, Lou scoffed. No, but I'm sure as hell gonna have your daughter's back when she walks into an ambush. I ignored the speed limit and stop signs on the short drive to the elementary school and noticed Lou did the same behind me. We pulled into adjacent parking spaces and stormed the front doors, a united front. I hadn't stepped foot in the school since I was a student here. It looked as though not much had changed.
How do we know where to go?
Amanda wondered when we walked in through the front doors. I heard raised voices coming from one of the hallways. My money's on that way, I said.
Your sister ruined my life.
I didn't wait for the wits. I headed toward the shouting at a dead run. I made it to the open door just in time to see a seething Mrs. Felch fisting her hands at her sides as she leaned into Naomi's personal space.
I stalked into the room, but neither woman paid me any attention.
From what you've told me, your husband ruined your marriage. An innocent 11-year-old certainly isn't to blame,
Naomi said, hands on hips, not giving the woman an inch. She was wearing another flirty denim skirt. This one had a distressed hem with threads that skimmed her thighs. I both loved the way it looked on her and hated the fact that she was wearing it to serve beer to men who weren't me.
She's got her mother's blood, doesn't she? There's nothing innocent about any of you,
Mrs. Felch hissed, pointing an accusing finger in Naomi's face. My plans for Naomi and her tight little skirt would have to wait. Bullshit. My announcement had both women whirling around to face me. Mrs. Felch's eyes got big behind her glasses. I was a scary fucking guy when I wanted to be, and right now I wanted to be downright terrifying. I took two steps forward, and she backed into her desk like a cornered rat in bifocals.
Knox, Naomi said through clenched teeth, I'm so glad you're here.
She was tilting her head and subtly pointing toward the floating wall that created a coat room just inside the doorway. I glanced in the direction and caught a glimpse of blonde and blue hair. Waylay, holding a jar of God knows what, gave me an embarrassed finger waggle of a wave from her belly on the floor. For fuck's sake, I muttered.
There's no need for language, Mrs. Felch barked.
The fuck there isn't, I countered, angling myself to block part of the opening to the coat room. And I think Waylay's grandparents will agree. I jerked my head toward Lou, who, until that point, had been holding Amanda back with a good grip on her summer sweater. Seems we've got ourselves a family conference, I said, crossing my arms over my chest.
Judging from how your daughter turned out,